If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe at lifebetweenthevines.com.
I have never produced a vintage that I think is bad wine. They're just different.
We are farmers, and in order for us to make it, we have to be able to sell the products that we produce.
For better or for worse, I've learned by usually making mistakes and then just trying not to make them a second time.
So for us, you know, the central thing is the fruit, and it's what's given by the vineyard.
It all starts in the vineyard. We've all heard that, right?
So drink a lot and drink well. That would be my advice.
We say, so drink the wine. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 407. This week we feature Lynn Fahey, head winemaker at Cuca Spring Vineyards in the Finger Lakes region, New York. Hard to believe it, but this is our first interview with a winemaker from the Finger Lakes region of New York State. Lynn Fahey is the new head winemaker at Cuca Spring Vineyards, and like most winemakers, passion brought her here. Lynn said something that really stuck with me. You never meet someone who used to be a winemaker. How true is that? Lynn has a great future ahead, and it was my pleasure to be able to learn more about this great winemaking region. You can also hear Lynn on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the term chewy. This is going to be a really fun interview today. I'm really looking forward to this because it is our first foray into the Finger Lakes area of New York. And I am here with Lynn Fahey, and she is the new winemaker at Cuca Spring Vineyards. How are you doing, Lynn?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time, because you're, what, smack dab in the middle of harvest at this particular moment?
We're coming to the end. A bit of an early season here in the Finger Lakes, so we have our last fruit coming in tomorrow.
Interesting you say that it's early. Am I fair in assuming that that's effects of global warming, or is that how it's been for you lately?
I think that's how I experience it. I mean, I worked in Oregon before here, and I worked there during a string of very warm vintages, and I feel that, everything in the Finger Lakes varies year to year. We can never really predict what's going to happen here, but we're definitely seeing trending towards warming and more kind of, it's always variable weather here, but even maybe more so now.
Sure, I understand. And you worked at Torsadum, correct?
I did, yeah. I was there for about 2.5 years. It was my first full-time wine job.
Great. And that was James. We interviewed him
That's great.
Just around, as a matter of fact, a year ago now, because it was during harvest. I remember he was, needless to say, up to his neck. So great guy.
Yeah, no, I feel really fortunate to have been able to work there. When I worked with James, he's really creative, has tons of energy, really organized, and let me do a lot of different things and gave me a lot of responsibilities that taught me a lot of what I do now.
Yeah, interesting. And a really beautiful piece of property, I might add.
It was probably one of the most beautiful places I've ever worked.
Wow. Yeah, they're a little more tucked away, too, a little harder to find, which is even more fun, I think.
Yeah, I always tell people when I think about Oregon and harvest, I've been a runner in my life, pretty much my whole life, and when I worked there, I would go to work before work and run the 6-mile loop around the Ribbon Ridge AVA, and usually ended up with me coming up Ribbon Ridge Hill near Chehalem's Vineyards, watching the sunrise over, you know, the Cascade Mountains and the pine trees. So it's pretty magical out there.
Yeah, you can't beat that. So you went to school at Baldwin Wallace.
I did. I studied pre-physical therapy and exercise science, so not really where I am now, but still, I really enjoyed going to school there, and I think that it kind of led me in the direction of ending up in the wine industry, only because I was working in a lot of service jobs when I was in school, and got really into tasting craft beer and eating out at different restaurants and kind of experiencing the nightlife in downtown Cleveland.
Sure, a great place. Are you from Ohio originally, or where are you from?
No, I'm actually from just outside of Rochester. So I grew up kind of close to the Finger Lakes, but never really thought I'd come back here. So, me 5 years ago would be surprised to see me now.
Funny. That's great.
It's a great school. I studied abroad twice when I was there, so I had a lot of great experiences in Cleveland and then traveling and everything out of coming from there.
Sure. And from what I read about you, you got your start in beer, and the old saying goes, was it takes a lot of beer to make good wine. Is that kind of how it happens?
Yeah. Like I said, when I was at Baldwin Wallace, my senior year, I was saving up to travel. So I was working 3 different jobs on top of a full course load. And one of those was working at this bar restaurant that had 40 rotating taps of beer. Being kind of new to food and beverage, I was instantly curious and was just tasting all the time because the beers were constantly changing. And I got really interested in the different flavors and different styles and how there was so much variety and how exciting it was to actually drink for the sake of something tasting good versus just drinking it. So as a younger person, it really kind of piqued my interest in all things flavor.
So your evolution into wine, I mean, there must have been some point where you started drinking wine a bit more and saying, oh, there's even more flavors here.
Yeah, I guess it kind of started, I was sitting abroad in Australia, and I was dating somebody there who brought me to his family's small little vineyard, I mean, maybe an acre, probably less. And I remember we camped on the family's farm, woke up at sunrise, drank champagne, and then picked grapes in the morning. It was very scenic and beautiful. And I all of a sudden became really interested in drinking Shiraz and like all kinds of Australian reds and got into wine a little bit that way. And years later, I was supposed to go to graduate school for physical therapy. And I had taken some time to travel after college, and I'd met somebody when I was in Thailand, and he asked me what I would, because I was really on the fence of whether or not I wanted to be a physical therapist at all. And I was talking to him, and he was like, well, what would you do if you didn't do physical therapy? And I was like, well, maybe brewing. Like, I love beer. I know nothing about fermentation, but, like, I would love to just even work at a brewery, whether it's, like, their tasting room or get into production some way just to learn. And he's like, well, I work in the wine industry in Australia, and harvest is coming up. If you're interested in learning about fermentation, it might be like a fun thing for you to do if you have time. So I deferred my master's degree and ended up getting a job in New Zealand. And so I flew from kind of in a roundabout way through Ireland back to New Zealand and ended up staying there for 6 months and just really falling in love with the industry.
Yeah, it does kind of get its teeth into you, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I liked working outside, being active, using my hands, kind of being around people who really enjoy what they're doing and are having a really good time doing it. And then you literally learn something every single day and really never stop.
Yeah, I would agree. For me, I'm embarrassed to say I have not been to the Finger Lakes area. I've drank plenty of wine from that area, but just never had the chance to get there. And it is on my list once I'm able to travel again. But my question to you is, what makes the wine in the Finger Lakes area different?
I think what I realized the most is the ability to have these beautiful acidities with really amazing ripeness. So there's all this flavor. We have brightness. Even with the red, it's like this year might be different, but most years we have more like vibrant, red-fruited, kind of higher acid red wines, which I really enjoy. They're really refreshing. They're more delicate and pretty than kind of like dark and kind of dense. And I think it's like this ability. We just have these hang times and this cool weather into the fall that really allows for fruit to mature and adds this level of texture and flavor that I think is pretty unique to the region.
Interesting. What was your growing season like this year?
I couldn't have been more perfect, actually. As my first endeavor into being a head winemaker, I have been so fortunate. We had a bit of a slow start in the beginning, so I thought we were going to be a few weeks behind when we were looking kind of March, April, May, and then all of a sudden in the summer it just warmed up and we had warm, dry, kind of 85 to 90 degree days all summer with pretty cool nights. That has pretty much continued into kind of August, September, when we started to move more towards 70s, 80s. But again, warm, sunny days, cool nights. And then now that we're into mid-October, we're just starting to see the rain come. There was a little bit of drought stress this year, but not enough to really shut things down. So, you know, the rain is welcomed, but now everybody's, like, this week in a mad dash to pick everything.
Yeah, I'll bet. You want to get it done. And I was a little surprised you went this late into the season. Is that typical for Finger Lakes?
Yeah. I mean, again, it varies year to year. Last year was pretty cold, I would say. We it started out the summer was pretty moderate, but then, and we started picking maybe late September, early October, but then it got pretty chilly mid-October and slowed everything down. So we were picking into mid-November, maybe even a little bit later last year. And I remember doing pump overs in the snow outside. So last year was a bit of a later vintage.
Oh, man, that could just make things really hard.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I know I was at Anthony Road at the time, but I know some people were picking when it was snowing outside. We had finished by then, but the snow and cold came early last year.
Yeah, that makes it very tough for harvest, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely cold fingers and toes when you're just sitting on the forklift all day or working outside.
Yeah, a very different experience than being up in Oregon, right?
Yes, no, in Oregon I had much nicer, warmer weather. Very, very hot. 2015 was a drought year that year, and I remember being in May and it was almost 100 degrees already at that point.
So was it just simply the opportunity that took you to Finger Lakes?
Yeah, I think being young and energetic and wanting, especially to pursue Riesling a little bit more. I mean, I was started at a great place working with James at Tresadum and being able to work with so many different styles of Rieslings and the three vineyards that were beautiful. It really made me even more passionate about Riesling, especially, I mean, I love Pinot Noir, don't get me wrong, Oregon Pinot is amazing, but Riesling was something that made me really excited. And kind of, I was getting to a point where I was like, well, what, do I stay here? Do I try to move to the next place, try to learn a little bit more? I looked at Michigan for a little while, and then reluctantly, but also gratefully, decided to come back home and come to the Finger Lakes. And knowing that I would have a lot of opportunity to have influence, to have a little bit more creative control, and kind of make an impact on a small region.
That's great. It does make a big difference. So this is your first gig as a head winemaker. That's got to be both fun, a bit daunting, and a little crazy, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I've been really lucky to have such a great vintage, and I have a really great team working for me. I couldn't have asked for a better setup to go into my first vintage. I think initially I was definitely terrified leading up to it, but then as soon as the grapes started coming in, I was like, okay, yes, I've done this before. We know what's going on. The biggest change is from me doing a lot of the tiller work and a lot of the forklifting, now I'm just delegating, managing, kind of looking at everything as a whole and trying to keep track of everything, it's kind of a new territory for me.
Sure, I'll bet. So let's talk about the wine specifically. What are you making there at Cuca?
We make quite a few different varieties. I think obviously our main focus is Riesling, and just being a Finger Lakes wine, Riesling grows so amazing here. And then Gewürztraminer is something we focus on as well as we work with a variety that we grow on site here called Vignole, which is a French hybrid, and that makes beautiful kind of off-dry style wines. It has really high acidity and ripens to a lot of sugar. And then for reds, we mostly work with Cab Franc and Blaufränkisch, and we're getting more into Saporavi, and we do some blends with Cab Sauv and Merlot as well.
Are you doing any sparkling at all?
Funny you should ask that. So they haven't had one in the past, but the old winemaker had contracted with one of our growers to plant some Zweigelt for us, 2 acres, and this year was the first year fruit off that site, and it was beautiful. It tasted really great early, and we were going to have it hand-picked just because the vines were so young.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided that it could make for potentially great sparkling wine. I think it's going to end up being Blanc de Noir in the end, but it's really pretty. So the 2020 vintage will be the first vintage of sparkling wine released from Cuca Spring.
Very cool. Now, I'm assuming that's something you have to farm out. You don't do it in-house, I would think. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's actually, I mean, I would say that one of the largest attributes of the Finger Lakes is the amount of collaboration and community here. So I will be probably working with a few different other wineries in order to actually get it into its final stage, just because we don't own the sparkling equipment ourselves. And a lot of people, I mean, the Finger Lakes is I mean, you can make amazing sparkling wine here, and so most people do a little bit here and there. So those who do larger volumes, people usually just work with them to schedule in times to bottle at their facilities.
Sure. Yeah, I've heard of that in other areas, Michigan in particular.
Yeah.
About how many acres are you farming there?
So for us, our farm is actually quite small. So we only have about 10 acres, which means that I work with a number of growers throughout the region to bring in the volume we need to kind of be where we want for the different varieties.
Okay. And I have to ask the obligatory, how many cases are you producing?
We're around 8,000 to 9,000 cases, so pretty small.
Sure, but still very nice. I mean, let's face it, a lot of wine lovers seek out the smaller wineries.
Yeah, I like working with small lots. So being in a smaller winery, I'm able to break things up, work with things in slightly smaller volumes, experiment with some things here and there, and kind of really focus on what we're doing.
Sure. Well, you actually kind of answered this question, and you just hit on it right now, experimenting. Being that you're new there, do you get the chance to experiment a bit then?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things that definitely I've talked to the old winemaker extensively about style and things that, you know, I'm definitely carrying over a little bit from him. But other things I have a lot of free rein on. So, like I said, with the sparkling program, that's new. I've also been working with a little bit more whole cluster. So actually today we're pressing a 50% whole cluster Saperavi ferment that I was working with, doing a little bit of whole cluster with Cabernet Franc, as well as I have a carbonic Lemberger in tank right now as well. So I'm kind of doing a lot with whole cluster reds. I've worked with a little bit in the past at, you know, with James. We did a lot of 50% whole cluster Pinot Noir, and I really like the outcome of those wines, so I did it in very small lots, kind of experimenting here and there to see how things turn out.
You're keeping pretty busy, aren't you?
Yeah, I literally wake up every morning and be like, did I forget something today? My team is very organized, and I have time to kind of sit down for a minute every day and look at what we have going and what needs to be checked on and really staying on top of things, and they're really independent. So that gives me a lot of opportunity to just think about the direction everything's going.
Sure, I'll bet. And, you know, you talk about your team, and that brings me to another subject. I've talked to a lot of winemakers in different parts, specifically of the United States. And that is about labor shortages. Are you guys having a harder time finding labor these days, or is it the regular crew?
Yeah, so I think in terms of farming and handwork, I think there's definitely, it's really hard to find the labor in that sense. With New York City restaurants kind of shutting down, there's been a surplus of kind of sommeliers available that I have been looking for work here. People have reached out to me a lot about work in our cellar, so this year wasn't as difficult to find labor as most other years. But I think in the past, you know, finding cellar workers, the pool wasn't very big for the Finger Lakes just because we aren't as well known as, you know, working in the West Coast and where wineries may have a little bit more kind of capacity to hire on a bigger staff. But this year, I mean, everyone I know has always found people to work in the cellars that we need, but this year in particular, we had a kind of a surplus. The demand was higher than the supply.
Yeah, that's a great problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, my team has been really great, very grateful to have them here and that they want to be here and that they're learning and capable of doing the job that I ask them to do. And we're having a really good time doing it, so that's a bonus.
That's the best part. Excellent. So let's go back to the wines for a minute here. Is there prospects for aging for Finger Lakes wines?
Absolutely. Especially with Riesling, there's so much kind of meat to Riesling that makes it so great for aging by either being dried, having really beautiful acidity that will carry it into age, or I think a really great style of the Finger Lakes that almost everybody does consistently well, which is kind of that off-dry, maybe 10 to 20 grams residual sugar. Having that a little bit of sugar and high acid, again, will allow the wines to age for quite a while. Even with the sweeter wines, dessert-style wines, we have such a range of what we do here. And with the reds, too, I mean, this year is quite the exception to most rules, but historically, you know, we may not get as much tannin and structure as some of our West Coast counterparts, but we do have this lively acidity that kind of keeps the wines a little bit longer.
nice. That's great. That's good to know that. So for your time in the wine business, is there kind of like a big lesson you've learned, kind of the one big mantra you live by as a winemaker?
There's probably quite a few. I would say for me, and maybe now getting into like head winemaking, one of my jobs is to make sure that I'm available to step in if something needs to get done. So never shying away from the hard work or the time that it takes to do something, and really instilling that in my team. And that way we're more efficient. We're getting things done. Sometimes I don't have the time to be racking cleaning tanks, but if it needs to get done, then, you know, I'm willing to step in and do it. And I think, you know, never stop learning, never stop trying to move forward. Winemakers I've worked with, you know, we're always trying to progress. We're always trying to make things better, learn from year to year, and kind of push that towards the next vintage and what we can do better the next year.
Sure. So that goes hand in hand with the next question is, and this could go positive or negative, depending on how you look at it, what makes you crazy about the wine business?
I think it is. It's like that I will never know everything, that I'm constantly in search of knowledge and trying to learn more and more and knowing that I never will know it all. But it keeps me energized and pursuing more. And so for me, that's something that it drives me crazy, maybe in a positive way, but also in an anxiety-driven way. Like, I will never know it all, but I'm going to keep trying to learn as much as I can.
That's great. Well, it's a good attitude. I mean, it's kind of like the old deal of learning something new every day, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think now that I'm doing more than ever, I'm learning at a faster rate. You know, now that I'm seeing and having to look at a wider range of things and being responsible for it all, I'm learning, you know, that much faster, which is really exciting and keeps me invigorated. James actually told me one time when he offered me a full-time job at Tresatum, he was like, you know, there are very few people who once were winemakers, which has always kind of stuck with me.
That's I've never heard anybody say that before, but that's very true, isn't it?
Yeah, I think once you get in, it's hard to imagine yourself doing anything else.
Yeah, you got me thinking. I'm going to have to use that, but it's true.
Yeah, and I think even if you are and move on, you might move on to something else, but stay in the industry.
Sure.
I think the industry is a bit addictive. I mean, again, you have a bunch around of really smart, passionate people who love what they do and who want to enjoy it. I mean, everyone wants to, like, share their wine, share their knowledge, and people who want to show up to work every day.
Sure. Well, you're around wine. I mean, I could deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not
it's
a bad thing.
It's a pretty
thing.
Happy place, not gonna lie.
That's true. I've never met an unhappy winemaker. So I don't know how often you get to do interviews, if you've done many in your career. So with the idea of media doing interviews, and again, not having done a ton of them yourself, but what would be the one question that you've not been asked, or of all the typical questions that you're being asked, what's the one you would really like to be asked?
You know, that's a tough one. For me, I guess it's not what, I mean, it's something that I get asked, but it's something that I really enjoy talking about, which is some of my favorite varieties to work with, which is, you know, now that this is my first year working with Saparavi, but it's something that I'm very passionate about and very excited about in terms of a kind of a variety that's kind of rare in the United States.
Yeah, I'd say.
But is making really interesting wines.
And is there a unique challenge to that?
It is. I mean, so I've been talking a lot. So the other winery who makes quite a bit of Saparavi is Wiemeyer and Standing Stone. I've been talking a lot to one of their winemakers about Saparavi and learning the skins are kind of thinner, but they're really rich in tannins. So you get a lot of juice with Saparavi, and it likes to ferment kind of quickly, it seems. And that's been kind of a challenge trying to rein that in. And it has it's really high in tannin, really high in acid, and has a really strong aroma and flavor profile. And so it's an interesting wine to try to balance out when you have so much acid and tannin kind of not competing, but like not quite settling in with each other.
Sure. I'm assuming that is a red. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. It's a Georgian red. So it's, if you read like any kind of wine textbooks, they talk about the first regions that were known for, or that they discovered as like cultivating grapes for wine. And so the region in Georgia or that they think that the first, like, grape cultivation started, the varieties were Saporavi and Arcatatelli. So they're really kind of ancient varieties. The first time I had Saporavi was in the Finger Lakes. Dr. Frank had planted it like a neighboring acre or two a long time ago, and they had a Saporavi, and now there's a handful of producers now doing it. But it is, to me, a really striking and interesting grape to work with.
I would love to try that sometime. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Yeah, I could tell. That's great, though. That was a perfect answer to the question. Being for the period of time you've been in this area, and you were kind of implying that Finger Lakes aren't terribly known yet, I think they're gaining a lot of interest in the wine world. What do you see the future of Finger Lakes wines?
Honestly, I think it's really bright. I think it is a region that's growing. We have really high-quality wines. It's also a region of value. None of our wines are, you know, working in Oregon, I became used to paying $50 a bottle for wine because that was what was normal to me there. Whereas here, you know, you're looking at like $20 at that kind of mid-range to higher-end price point. So I think there's just like great hospitality. It's a beautiful region. And honestly, with COVID being one of the first places open, we have seen a lot more traffic from the city, from Philadelphia, from surrounding areas, because we've been one of the first places that anyone could come and do something. When it first started and when we first reopened, I kind of thought, I was like, people are going to want to come here. They can rent a house, they can be on the lake, they can come taste wine, go to breweries, and people are, you know, wearing masks and being safe and social distancing. But we're already seeing an increase in traffic from the city and gaining notoriety with just Tri-State area. And with that, I think there's just year after year an increase in quality amongst the region. So I really think there will be a boom in the Finger Lakes coming sooner rather than later.
That makes sense. I'm assuming you do have a tasting room. For our listeners to learn a little bit about you online, how would they find out about you? What is your website?
Our website is cucaspringwinery.com. So again, one spring, not multiple. Cucaspringwinery.com.
Excellent. Lynn, I appreciate you taking time out of your day, especially during harvest, and thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
Learn more by visiting cucaspringwinery.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Copyright 2020.